Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with your hosts, Matty Wood,
Matthew Davis,
and the Roto Gut, Vlad Sedler.
What is up, everybody, and welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm here with my co-host, Matty Wood Davis, and I'm Vlad Sedler. And we're recording on Wednesday, March 23rd, early in the morning. We are about a day or two away from our Las Vegas trip in the NFBC, our annual pilgrimage out there. That's very exciting. And then baseball season is starting up in a couple of weeks. So we're right in the mix of spring training. And we've got pitcher velocity changes, pitchers adding new pitches, players getting hurt, just about the normal things you expect during spring training. And I'm here with Matt. So what's going on, Matt? How you doing on this fine Wednesday?
This is one of the best, if not the best, week and weekend of the entire year. Personally for me, excluding possibly my daughter's birthday and my wedding anniversary with my wife. I'll throw those in just to play it safe there. But I'm very excited. I'm not normally a caffeinated individual in the mornings. You and I usually record in the evening, and I'll have a glass of wine while we talk or a beer. But my wife made me a London Fog, so I have that going inside of my veins right now. So the electricity is certainly on, and it is rolling. I'm super excited to talk about our outline today, which includes some more free agency transactions and trades and the fantasy impacts alongside of those things. And I think we'll sprinkle in some, you know, NFBC main event talk as well, and where we think things are going to go moving forward, which they start tomorrow, which is really exciting because usually we're accustomed to seeing the first NFBC main event kick off in Chicago. And then shortly after that, it heads to New York for the weekend. And then it heads on over to Las Vegas, over to us. But with things changing and the schedule changing due to the CBA getting pushed back a little bit, we are going to be setting the NFBC main event trends this weekend. So I'm really excited.
Yeah. And what's really exciting also is these free agent signings, these last few guys that have officially joined with new teams. It's going to be very interesting to see some of these players in new uniforms. A last couple of players that are unsigned. One of them is Tommy Pham, who's been linked to many different teams. I'd seen something about the Tampa Bay Rays and possibly playing some first base, but nothing has transpired there yet. And then Michael Conforto, who still is without a team as we record here on this Wednesday. That actually is not going to make a difference in the brunch bet. About a month ago, you and I recorded on a podcast where we predicted all the major free agents, and we did a little calculation, and turns out you won by one. And unless Michael Conforto signs with the Phillies, which at this point, after signing two big outfielders for expensive contracts, likely isn't happening, I have no chance in tying. So, my friend, you've got some brunch coming to you this weekend.
Yes, I'm really excited for that. And we have a special person, or a special guest, I should say, joining us for that brunch as well. It'll be the champ. So Phil Dessau will be having breakfast with us as well. A shout out to Nick Castellanos for going to the Phillies and Anthony Rizzo for going back to the New York Yankees. Those were the two big ones that pretty much divided things, because you and I both agreed on Clayton Kershaw heading to the Dodgers. But yeah, so that was a lot of fun. Where do you, speaking of Tommy Pham and Michael Conforto, where do you think that they go? Let's give some more predictions.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, I could literally see, I know it sounds crazy, but I could see like the Pittsburgh Pirates just, you know, picking him up on a cheap deal, just adding a bat and not looking completely inept. Anything's possible. Conforto, really, I think there's so many teams that could potentially pick him up. Man, I really thought he was going to make for a really nice fit in Philadelphia. But to be honest, I'm not sure.
It's going to be really funny if and when he signs with the Colorado Rockies, huh? And pushes out another person that people were drafting in draft champions.
Yeah, I can see
outfield.
It.
Yeah, the outfield would then be full with Conforto, Bryant, and Blackman. And then there is no more Connor Joe, Raimel Tapia, and Sam Hilliard. So
no.
That's something the Rockies would do, too. I could see.
Very, very, very Rocky-esque. So the two biggest signings since we last spoke last week were both dominoes we were waiting to fall. Of course, after Freddie Freeman, who was signed when we were on air last week. But the two guys we're talking about here are two big-time shortstops, Carlos Correa signing a monster deal with the Minnesota Twins, 3 years, a little over $105 million. He's got opt-out clauses after this season and next. And that's basically, you know, $35 million a year, not too shabby. And then Trevor Story signing with the Boston Red Sox, 6 years, $140 million, a bit lower on the value there per year. That's a little over $23 million. Trevor Story joins an absolutely loaded lineup. And the Carlos Correa move, I guess, a little surprising. I don't think a lot of people saw the Twins coming into play there, but he's reunited with a guy he was drafted right next to in the draft back in 2012, Carlos Correa, the number one overall pick, Byron Buxton, the number two. What do you think of these two deals? Look at them from a fantasy perspective, how the market's moved and how they look in their lineups.
Yeah. Starting with Carlos Correa, I don't think it does much to his market or necessarily his value, even though the Twins lineup, from an OBP and talent perspective, it's definitely not the same as the Houston Astros. But when you remove Carlos Correa from the Houston Astros lineup, obviously their lineup doesn't become as thick when looking at it with Jeremy Pena there instead of Carlos Correa. So I'm not going to try and overthink the lineup context too much because the Twins do have some firepower. They do have some guys that make contact. And we have seen this offense score some runs in the past. So if we want to say that maybe that's a wash, that's fine. The problem with Carlos Correa for me, outside of 2017, is he doesn't steal any bases. That's dried up and gone. So it has to be a roster construction for me first and foremost. So in your first seven rounds, whichever offensive hitters you have, you really do need to have some sort of roster construction built in with a substantial amount of stolen bases, because I don't mind Carlos Correa when it comes to the fact that he's slightly above average in power and he should be able to absorb a lot of counting stats being an everyday player in the thick of the Twins lineup. And he's above average in batting average. So he's really only hurting you in the stolen base department. So roster construction being something that you really need to be aware of when drafting him, I think he's fine. And I think one of the other things to note is he's the 15th shortstop going on average over the last week, just looking at the shortstops in ADP. And 16th is Dansby Swanson. After that, it sort of craters a little bit, and the tiers kind of fall off, in my opinion. And so I think that he's kind of that last guy. If you don't have a shortstop already, I would like to have one shortstop, potentially maybe getting a second for the middle with two of those guys in the top 15. So I think that if you don't have a shortstop left and you're in the eighth round and you have the stolen bases, I think that he makes sense there. But with what are your thoughts on that before getting into Trevor Story?
Yeah, I mean, I think if it maybe moves his value a little bit, I think this is one of the rare scenarios where a player that has made a move, similar to Chris Bryant, actually, who went to the Rockies. This is almost in another direction, like Correa signing with the Yankees would have had a profound effect on his ADP. And we're just looking at online drafts over, since that trade occurred, and his ADP in those online championships on the NFBC is 102. So the market hasn't really moved there. The high pick in 22 drafts on Correa was 91, and many of those drafts have taken place since he joined the Twins. As far as his overall profile, you kind of nailed it. Doesn't really steal bases. He did have a career best season. He finally hit triple digits on one of runner RBI, which he did with 104 runs last year. Had a tremendous walk to strikeouts rate. It was basically over 0.6, over 60% for the first time. And so basically career bests in walk rate and strikeout rate. Power, like you said, it's above average, but for top 100 overall player, it really isn't above average, because still he has yet to hit over 30 home runs. And again, you just hope he stays healthy. But there could be a little bit of magic here in store, him with Byron Buxton. We're not sure exactly how this lineup's going to shake out. I know Roster Resource shows right now as Byron Buxton leading off. Excellent hitter, 300 plus batting average guy, Luis Arraez second, Carlos Correa third, and Jorge Polanco fourth, Miguel Sano fifth. That's an interesting grouping there. I mean, you know, really maybe not the biggest star power names outside of Buxton Correa, but maybe there's a little bit of magic there. So we'll see. They'll take on some bad pitchers in the division, some good ones as well. So I'm just okay with him. Not going to still end up with a lot of Carlos Correa just because there are so many shortstops I like ahead of him.
I will say it is deeper than the Astros lineup too. The bottom third for the Twins, I think, has a little bit more pop and contact than the Astros. Looking at Trevor Story, over the last week in DCs, he's now surpassed. He has surpassed Fernando Tatis Jr. in ADP, and rightly so. So he's in the top five, and he was before that. But he, on the average, he's been going in the third round of drafts all winter long, and he is now rising. He is going to continue to rise, and he's likely going to end up surpassing Tim Anderson. I've seen it now in two drafts that I've done since signing with the Boston Red Sox, one of which was in the Tag Team Championship. Trevor Story did get drafted ahead of Tim Anderson, and then last night in a 50-round 12-team draft, Tim Anderson was drafted after Trevor Story. So we've seen it twice now, and I think that's something that's going to continue. So if you're going into the main event and you're mapping out your draft, and let's say you're picking first or second and coming around to you in the second or third round, and you're hoping to pair Trevor Story with your first round pick, I don't think that that's going to happen. I think that his ADP is going to lie within, 29 to 25 right there. So I don't think he even gets to 30 come main event time. And this is one of the few spots that this was going to have this impact. If he signs with the Giants, I know Giants fans wanted him to go there. His ADP doesn't necessarily move much, maybe goes down a little bit, right? But going to the Red Sox, it's one of those few places that with the team surrounding him, the park factor that he's going to be playing in, and then the AL park factors on top of that, it's pretty good. He's going to be a riser.
Yeah, it's definitely spicy. The lineup there is fantastic. Story has been moving up. I think right after that signing, that Sunday, there were three online championship drafts, and we saw his ADP jump immediately. So this is somebody that had been going in the 30 to 40 overall range. So basically the third round of 15 teamers. And so moving into these 12-team format drafts, you saw two of those three drafts on Sunday, he went earlier than pick 30. So basically between 25 and 30. That's probably where we're going to see him in main events. I think that is kind of a little area where people have been looking for somebody to kind of jump into that range. So somebody with a with an early first-round pick, starting with a Soto, a Garrett Cole, somebody like that with their first pick, really that's back half of the second round, 25 to 30. It seems to be lacking a little bit. Almost seems as if you're forcing in some respects, unless you love a pitcher there, like an Aaron Nola, Urias, or Bieber, unless you really want a closer, Hendricks or Josh Hader. Other than that, you're looking at guys like Jordan Alvarez, Cedric Mullins, Tim Anderson. For me, I think he's a perfect fit in that round range and a perfect fit for this lineup. They're going to mash, right? I mean, Boston was really off to a great start last season. They even had some, I wouldn't call them unexpected performances, but I think they got a little bit more than they expected out of Enrique Hernandez. Bobby Dalbec was really mashing down the stretch last season. And probably have a little bit of a bounce back season from JD Martinez, right? I mean, last year he, just looking at his counting categories, I don't know. I mean, if you watched him last season, it just seemed like he wasn't his typical mass producing self. I think even though he's almost 35, a healthy season from him, mash him with Xander Bogaerts, Rafael Devers, who's still only 25 and mashing, Trevor Story and Alex Verdugo. You've got yourself quite a combo here. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, 30-20 again seems like pretty reasonable.
Yeah, and then again with the talent you were talking about, look at the OBP as a team. They're always a top 10, getting close to a top 5 unit in OBP. And this is the best lineup he's ever been a part of, even when Arenado and Blackman were in their prime. This is a better team. And it It's going to be really exciting to see where he goes. I think people are going to get a little stir crazy with it. I know people have been talking about that they don't run. So last year, before we get off of Trevor Story, let's talk about that real quick, because people are going to have him projected from anywhere from 15 to 20 stolen bases. The Boston Red Sox were 29th out of 30 teams in stolen bases last year with 40.
Wow.
Okay. Does that concern you at all with a team that only had 40 stolen bases in 2021?
I mean,
is that a talent thing, or is that a managerial front office organizational thing?
I don't know. I mean, I forget how they were with stolen bases the previous season, but I think a lot of it also has to do with the type of players that they have on their team. And because you do have a lot of guys in that lineup that just, aren't necessarily quick or fast or in a position, like their traditional 1-5 guys are better, just sort of contact hitters. They have some power and are good on base guys. They're not necessarily speed guys, so they're really just playing to the style of the team, right? You might see Jaron Duran or Jackie Bradley stealing some bases near the bottom of the lineup. Maybe Alex Verdugo runs a little bit more, but I think adding Trevor Story's speed component is helpful. I don't know if he's necessarily going to slow down to the point where he's getting, you know, only 10 to 12 stolen bases, but I could see maybe higher teens, maybe 17, 18, as opposed to the 20 plus that we've seen the last couple of years. So yeah, I don't think it changes too much with that.
Okay.
Nick Castellanos, 30 years old, fan favorite for many reasons. One of them is not that quote that you may have saw. That was a fake about how he's not concerned about Max Scherzer and Jake DeGrom, and all he cares about are where to find the best Philly cheesesteaks. That's obviously a spoof, if in case you saw that little blur. But he joins the Philadelphia Phillies, 5-year, $100 million contract, nice and clean there on the numbers, $20 million a year. And he joins an already loaded squad. I mean, you know, we were concerned about this offense heading into even, I think, last week's podcast, right? Because it was before the Schwarber signing, because it was essentially, the offense was essentially Bryce Harper, JTL Realmuto, Jean Segura, and Rhys Hoskins. Outside of that, I mean, looking at the outfield at the time, it was really bleak. Looking at, Matt Vierling, who's more of a platoon bat on one side of things. Mickey Moniak has really never made anything of himself. Adam Hailsley, who's essentially a quad A guy. And now you add Kyle Schwarber, who's going to be their new leadoff man, and Nick Castellanos, who's been sneakily one of the best all-around hitters in baseball the last few seasons, excluding that 2020 pandemic season. He has not hit below 289 in any of his past three full seasons. He's always healthy, although last year he did miss about 20 games, yet still reached 100 RBIs with 34 homers and a 309 average. And he's a stud. And then this lineup is instantly becomes one of the stronger ones, one of the more fun ones to attack, both from a best ball stack perspective, from just an overall draft perspective. But how do you feel about Nick Castellanos as far as what he can do leaving Cincinnati from one hitter's park to another, but in a lineup with better offensive context, over or under last year's line?
I'll do you one better. Earmuffs if you're a Yordan Alvarez truther, because I think Castellanos outperforms him outright this year.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, I think that he goes over. I think that the lineup is better. I think that the OBP and talent around him is much stronger when you have Bryce Harper, Rhys Hoskins, JT Realmuto, and now Kyle Schwarber. That is absolutely insane. The park factor, albeit it isn't the as good as Great American Ballpark, because that's number one in home run park factor, but Citizens Bank isn't too far off. They rank, what is it here?
Top 10 for sure, right?
Yes. Sorry, I have the list. I have lift flip backwards. They're seventh, so they're 15% above league average, and I'm okay with that. I think that the park factors in general, right? So NL Central park factors, you have Wrigley Field, and you have Pittsburgh, St. Louis. Those aren't really great places to go and hit. So I think getting out of that division as well, it's going to bode well. I just think overall we saw we saw his career best season last year, but I don't think that that's necessarily the ceiling. 34 home runs, 195 and counting stats with a 309 average. I think that the batting average is sustainable. I think that the power can stick or even go up. And the counting stats, why can't those increase as well? So health forbidding, obviously. He only played in 138 games last year. If you give him 145, 150 games played this year, now that the last year the NL did not have the DH is in factor here for the Philadelphia Phillies as well. So I think that we could see a 600-plus plate appearance season. We could see 40-plus home runs out of him, and we could see 200-plus in counting stats.
Wow. With a
300 batting average. I think that is all definitely in the range of outcomes for him.
Yeah, I mean, and even our FTN projection, it's really sort of middling because we've got 95 runs and 100 RBIs is probably low for a guy that's potentially hitting second in the lineup ahead of Bryce Harper. Then Kyle Schwarber probably, I don't know if he'll even he's got a great walk rate, but will Schwarber ever be on base if he's always going to be mashing home runs? I don't know. But that lineup, I mean, just it sets up really nicely with the left, right. And those first five guys, if the way it's set up now on roster resources, the way it's going to shake out with Schwarber, Castellanos, Harper, catcher JT Realmuto, and Rhys Hoskins, those guys are all within the same age too. They're all between 29 and 31 years old. Realmuto, the oldest of that group. Man, this is a hot lineup. I've been stacking him in underdog best balls. I've been doing my best to try to do that in on a team where I can get Harper first. I'm looking to get Schwarber, Casty, and Hoskins later. I think that's a stack that can really pay off these days.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's going to be a fun one in DFS, man.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you betcha. Kenley Jansen going to the Braves. That one, I don't know. Does it sing? How does that feel?
I wasn't expecting him to go back to Los Angeles. I thought he was going to go to the Marlins this entire time. So going to the Braves, it backdoored a lot of people in the fantasy community. But for me, I was ready to say farewell to Kenley Jansen. I thought that from an organizational standpoint, albeit I don't care how much money, even if they spend it at a dumb expense for the Dodgers, they're billionaires. This is a very rich organization. They're very wealthy. So I don't care how their money's spent. When people talk about, well, look how much money they're spending on this or that, does it really matter? It's not your pocketbook. But I didn't mind that they did not bring back Kenley. I think that they'll be able to piece together the bullpen fine there. The more interesting point was, what does that do to Atlanta? Well, he becomes the closer. What does that do to Will Smith, who was going in the fifth round of drafts? It's bad luck, right? That's not a bad from a perspective of looking at a fantasy manager and saying you drafted Will Smith in the fourth, fifth, or sixth round. You're a terrible manager because he's not even a closer. Nobody could have predicted that. So it's really just either a good luck. You didn't draft closers early. Or he just wasn't one, Will Smith being this talked about here. Will Smith just wasn't one that you ended up drafting. It happens to be a late landmine in the season, and it's unfortunate because he won't have the closer role. Don't try and talk yourself into that. Dismiss his ADP. I wouldn't draft him, really, to be honest with you, in a main event even really right now. I think that there's other people that are going to possess potential for more save opportunities than Will Smith will have, health forbidding to Kenley Jansen. The leash is going to be really long there. We know that Snitker likes to stick with this guy, and they just paid him, and they paid him to be their closer, Kenley Jansen, that is. So it's unfortunate to see what happened with Will Smith, all jokes aside on Twitter and stuff. So it's a luck thing, good or bad.
Yeah, and that's actually kind of the issue is, and you always obviously take things in good stride and don't really get into, I guess like me, right? I mean, we're not really battling it out with analysts on Twitter, and a lot of us are friends. And I think most people know people's humor. So I think maybe some people could have taken your tweet out of context. I know, myself having a couple Will Smith shares, I know other people who may not have known and be like, what the heck is this guy like, victory lapping? No, of course not. There were definitely situations where it made sense. For me personally, what's funny is I went from being anti Will Smith for whatever reason in early January, and it was almost a reflex from the previous season. What it was is I was all in on Will Smith, got him on my two main event teams as an 11th rounder and was happy. It paid off. And this isn't the right way to look at it, but I was almost wanting to cut bait early or jump ship and not get in when the price went higher the next year. But that doesn't really make sense. I needed to have a substantial argument. So I started looking in, and a few things concerned me. Obviously, he ended the season great in the playoffs. He was a stud in the playoffs, but he did have a few blown saves down the stretch in the second half. Obviously, a little bit of issues with walks, and being a lefty there with a bunch of guys in the bullpen that are pretty solid. But this is perfect for the Braves, getting somebody like that, and also a little bit of a, you know, right back gotcha for picking up Freddie Freeman, although that I'm sure that wasn't the reason. But Kenley Jansen, Will Smith, he's off the board essentially. If you want to grab him at the end of a 12er in case something happens to Kenley, sure, Will Smith would be next in line. But, you know, again, you're looking at him as like a, you know, poor man's Devin Williams, I guess you could say. And even I'm not really targeting Devin Williams of the Milwaukee Brewers. As for Kenley, I think he moves up a little bit in the tier. We've already seen a little bit of an effect there at ADP. I think I've seen him drafted in the 40s, 50s, maybe something like that. But he's now in that tier with Ryan Pressly, Emmanuel Clase, and Edwin Diaz. And it makes sense. Braves are going to win a lot of games. He's going to be a big part of that. And it's also hard to really, you know, I think I trust him a little bit more than Aroldis Chapman. And that's why I think I would bump Jansen up to the tier above and leave Mr. Chapman in the tier by himself with Jordan Romano, who I actually prefer to Chapman, but with still the looming concern of them adding someone. But at this point, there's no one to add, right? Unless you trade for Craig Kimbrell, it looks like Jordan Romano's the closer.
Craig Kimbrell is the wild card right now. Everyone's just kind of waiting to see where he goes. Real quick to close things off on Kenley Jansen, you mentioned the ADP shift that's happening right now. He did jump Aroldis Chapman in ADP over the last week, and we have now seen a new min for Kenley Jansen, which is all the way up to 38. He's knocking on Ryan Pressly's door, and we could potentially see Kenley surpass Ryan Pressly here pretty soon. It wouldn't shock me. He's rising.
I'd rather, for the record, I'd still rather have Pressly. I think he's younger, better. So Jorge Soler to Miami, that is quite a lineup there. A lot of solid bats. They have a good pitching staff too. I mean, is there a chance that they actually do some damage here? I mean, what if this offense stays healthy? There are a bunch of mashers on this team. Jorge Soler fits it nicely. What do you think about him joining the Marlins?
Yeah, it's a downgrade in lineup context and talent-wise. The Miami Marlins aren't really rolling out one of the better offensive lineups in baseball. And then when you look at it from a park factor component, it's down there. They rank 22nd in home run factor, but that's 15% below league average. That's not great. I know that he did play at Kauffman Stadium in Kansas City, which is, you know, way, way, way down there, which is even below where the Miami plays, but I don't like the lineup around him. I know that they have the DH, which is great. The outfield isn't good. So from a real life perspective, I still think that this team is going to struggle to compete overall when looking at the other teams in the NL East. And then when you look at where Jorge Soler is going, I'm not really finding myself to get him. I wasn't drafting him when he was a free agent, and then this signing isn't going to have me push him up. And I don't think that the market is really going to be pushing him down any, because he signed. When somebody signs, they tend to rise just a little bit. I'm not sure that he'll go too much up in ADP. But for me, I'd rather grab somebody in that range at the outfield position that's going to be able to get me stolen bases. And I don't think Soler is going to do that for me.
So at the end of the season, their lineup only had one guy with more than 55 RBIs on the team, and it was quite a discrepancy. It was Jesus Aguilar. He had 93 RBIs. Adam Duvall had 68 for them before getting traded back to the Braves. But adding obviously Avisail Garcia, getting a full season out of Jesus Sanchez, and Jesus Aguilar healthy, you add Jorge Soler. So probably a little bit better than last season. Even Garrett Cooper, throw him in the mix. Somebody who I always thought was a decent hitter. He's not really going to be messing around in the outfield, which is a good thing. And really the only issue there, they're just missing somebody specifically for center field. I know that Jesus Sanchez was pretty brutal there in the minors. That's where he's going to be starting and playing center field to start. There have been some whispers of a Ramon Laureano trade. Ramon Laureano from the A's. He's got another month left on his suspension from last season. So we'll see there. Dodgers added a couple bats. Tyler, or a couple players, actually. Kevin Pillar really sort of muddies the water there. First of all, shout out my my 45th round pick in draft champions a few times there, Kevin Pillar. A perfect landing spot, even though it's going to be crowded. Obviously, injuries are going to hit there. Pillar still has a little bit in the tank. He's from the area, so or at least that's where I saw him. I ran into him at a UPS, I think, like 8 years ago. So never forget. I didn't say anything to him, but Tyler Anderson obviously changes things a little bit for the Dodgers rotation, the back end of it specifically. The concern would be for us who are Tony Gonsolin guys. You know, I'm a big Tony Gonsolin guy. I really want to see him kind of do his thing. I know that our buddy Jake Halusker from the Rotosaurus pod, he had mentioned something about not being sold on Gonsolin, concerned that Tyler Anderson, who really is a below average major league pitcher over the course of his career, that him joining the lineup and or being joining this team and being a lefty kind of throws things off for Gonsolin getting consistent rotation time. I will let it be known for those that don't know that Tyler Anderson is not as bad as his numbers look. One third of his innings pitched in baseball have been in Colorado, him in Coors Field in that elevation. Last season in Seattle, he did have some, you know, did have a bunch of good starts, and things could work out for him in Dodger Stadium, whether that's as a starter or as a multi-inning reliever. We're still not sure. But I had a tweet last week about how eerily similar his numbers are with Andrew Haney, another new lefty on that Dodgers team. And I'm talking about so many of, base stats, peripherals, so many things that are very similar. Really, the only difference is Tyler Anderson gives up less barrels, and Andrew Haney obviously has a much higher, not even much, maybe 3 point higher career strikeout rate. But outside of that, I think it's a nice little addition there for the Dodgers.
I think Anderson cracks the rotation, and I think he sticks in the rotation, and I think that he can actually outproduce Andrew Haney. This is a guy mm-hmm. that doesn't really walk a lot of people. He has last season he was able to figure that out with a 5.4% walk rate. We've seen in his rookie season he had a low walk rate, and then some kind of things went to the nay side in the walk rate department, 10.4%, 9.6% in 2019 and 2020, but there was some health issues as well. There was some knee inflammation, and then he had ended up having surgery in 2019. So I think for a few years in gap, we saw some knee problems that were causing some performances on the mound. He was probably trying to overcorrect things, which is going to screw up his mechanics and balance, which is then going to mess up your command and control. And I don't think that this is somebody that you should get too excited about. We've never seen a strikeout rate north of 22%. He has done that twice, though, in 2017 and 2018. So if the Dodgers are able to figure some things out, which this is an organization we do know gets the most out of their pitchers, similar to the Rays, the Brewers, and the Giants and Indians, I think that we could see a decent pitcher here that is streamable at times. And then there might be some spots to avoid him depending on the matchup. But you're looking at a pitcher that isn't really being drafted right now. His ADP over the last week is 526. I think that you'll see it in the 400 to 450 range, right? When we get to the main event, maybe you'll see somebody throw a dart from rounds 28 through 30, which are the last three rounds in a main event. Yeah, as long as you hear news of him actually making the rotation, which as a Dodger fan and knowing their current depth, I think he does. And we have seen him pitch 160 plus innings multiple times. So I am in on him in the late rounds.
And finally, our last transactions that we'll mention are the Chicago Cubs signing a couple of guys there. One is Jonathan VR. He's turning 31 this year. Switch hitter. He had that massive season a few years ago when he basically swiped 62 bags with 92 runs, 19 homers, massive season, first round value for the Brewers back in 2016. He stole 40 bases in 2019 for Baltimore. And then last year, you know, 500 plate appearances, 14 steals, 18 home runs, not too shabby, kind of a sneaky guy in the mid 200s to add. And this is actually solid team context for him, I believe. I was going to say that it maybe it hurts Patrick Wisdom a little bit, but the fact of the matter is now you have that DH spot, so that really kind of opens up things. But yeah, I like Jonathan VR being added there. Obviously, understand that batting average isn't necessarily his strength, but he can run. He's going to have, you know, some games in the summer where we're going to want to, you know, pluck him into our lineups for DFS. So I'm on board there. And then a couple of pitchers, Drew Smyly. I just have to mention him because, you know, I got suckered in last year after the hot 2020 September with the San Francisco Giants. But Drew Smyly basically obliterated my teams last season. I mean, I wouldn't call it obliterate, but it wasn't great. And thankfully jumped ship at the right time. But he joins a ballpark that's going to be tough for him in the middle of the summer. You know, when it's hot in Wrigley, I'm sure you'll go to some games where Drew Smyly is giving up bombs. But again, not really fantasy relevant unless maybe you're in a, you know, in a draft champions. And actually, I think depending on what things look like early in the season, he could be maybe a 30th round pick at best, a streamer in fab. So there's Drew Smyly. And I'll just mention a couple of guys in the bullpen that mess with things for Rowan Wick. They've added David Robertson, 37 years old now, former Yankees guy, former closer. And then Chris Martin is another guy that had saved some games for Baltimore. So that kind of muddies the waters for any clarity we had with Rowan Wick on to close for the Cubs.
Yeah. Okay. So let's start with the bullpen for the Chicago Cubs. David Robertson has 137 career saves, and he is a veteran. He'll be coming into this season at age 36. He's turning 37 next month. So 37 season. I think that he poses a threat to Rowan Wick. But with that being said, I think that Rowan Wick could still be the guy. I think that he should fall just a little bit in ADP. With there being, you know, more competition for the job, more people, more mouths to feed there that have actually accrued saves in the past, including Chris Martin. And Michael Givens is there as well. So there's certainly competition, but I think from a talent perspective, I'm pretty confident that Rowan Wick does have the best stuff. And albeit we know that the best stuff doesn't always play out to be the closer, but he did have the gig for a little bit last year with them, and we're seeing him look pretty good in the spring training right now. Last season, he did have 5 saves for the Chicago Cubs, and then he had 4 the season prior in the shortened 2020 season. So I'm still okay drafting Rowan Wick, but I don't think we need to be jumping him where he was going in the 17th, 18th round. Moving on to the starting rotation with Drew Smyly, I think this is an NL-only situation for me. I wish they would find him a piggybacker so he would have more fantasy value. We just know that the guy gets gassed out. The effectiveness and performance just declines steadily once that, you know, the second, third time through the lineup. So from a fantasy value in a league that we're playing in, as of today, I don't think that I would want any exposure to Drew Smyly. And then getting into Jonathan VR, just as we thought that the Chicago Cubs lineup was set and it kind of had the Rubik's Cube was all evenly colored on each and every side, we were going to be able to project X amount of bats for Rafael Ortega and Patrick Wisdom and Nick Madrigal and Nico Horner, et cetera, right? Well, we don't know where Jonathan VR is going to play every day. We do know that he can play at multiple positions. We do know that he has led off in the past. Roster Resource currently has him projected to hit 7th. We do know that Roster Resource isn't 100% correct on lineup projections. We also know that the Chicago Cubs are going to shuffle their lineups and no lineup is going to be stapled in every day. So that provides a question to Rafael Ortega. Does he continue to be the leadoff hitter for the Chicago Cubs? If Jonathan VR gets off to a good start and Ortega gets off slow, do they switch spots? And then what does that do to Rafael Ortega's runs? Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say Nick Madrigal. That's who I think.
Well, I'm getting there. So, well, just from a batting order perspective, I think that it poses a threat to Ortega. Then from a playing time perspective, look at Nico Horner, look at Nick Madrigal, look at Patrick Wisdom. With Jonathan VR having that versatility, it poses playing time threats to them as well. So I think it just causes a conundrum, to be honest with you. And then I don't know, from VR's perspective, it's not a good lineup that he's playing in. It's a bad offensive park that he's going to be playing in. And then the NL Central Park factors that I talked about, those aren't really good as well. So I think that he comes with question marks, and now people are going to have him rising in drafts. His current ADP over the last week in DCs is 254 with a min of 237. I think that we see that to continue to go up. People are going to talk themselves into 20 plus stolen bases and an everyday player with multi-position eligibility, which is fine. And he certainly could pay it off. He's proved me wrong time and time again. But I think that there are still too many question marks, and the talent around him is not that great. So I don't think that you're getting a lot in counting stats. He is a batting average liability. Over the last two seasons, Jonathan VR has had an expected batting average of 235 and 208. So I don't think that you're necessarily getting somebody that's going to be average to above average in batting average either. So I think that there's I think people are looking at a shiny turd.
That's fair. Yeah, and he's not, I don't really see him necessarily leading off, but man, it's going to just be one of those things where you play him in the right spots during the season. You need to stream some stolen bases. I think that's really the only way that works out. Maybe get a few home runs, but yeah, that lineup, most likely you'll have Rafael Ortega leading off against right-handed bats, Madrigal against lefties. That's probably the way it'll shake out. So might see Seiya Suzuki atop that lineup too. So never know what's going to happen there. Let's really quickly touch on some of the injury fallout with pitchers and hitters over the last week, because we do want to spend the last 20 minutes or so just kind of going over the closers and just the pool of saves before we head to Las Vegas. But real quick, looking at these pitchers here, Jacob DeGrom, obviously you knew exactly how this was going to go down. His first spring training start, he was going to, he's going to do what DeGrom does. And that's what he did. And of course, he's a first rounder again. We saw him start to creep up a little bit over the last week with a bill of clean health for now. And come main event weekend, looks like he's going to be a first rounder again. So let's talk about DeGrom, and then also where you are with Chris Sale and Jack Flaherty, with both guys expected to miss the start of the season.
Didn't have any Flaherty, didn't have any Sale. They were both Riddlers when we talked about that tier in starting pitching. I thought that both of them had previous injuries, and that profile was too risky for me at their current ADPs. So fortunately for me, I don't have any exposure to either of them, and I'm not going to be buying them on their dip wherever that goes in these main events. It's not going to be to me. I already know that there will be one of the 14 other teams that will draft Chris Sale and Jack Flaherty before I do. I'm just concerned with more injury risk, right? They're coming in injured. I don't want to draft injured pitchers. They already have a risk of being injured. And so I'm out on both of them. They continue to be a Riddler for me this draft season. And then I'm sorry, who was the first person you mentioned?
The Mets.
Oh, Jacob DeGrom. Jacob DeGrom. Yeah. That's okay. Right. Yeah. That guy. So yeah, cue up the Joker GIF with, and here we go, because, let's cut to the chase. Does he surpass Corbin Burns come main event time?
Yes.
Okay. So with that being said, over the last week, we have two pitchers going in this top 10, and that is Gerrit Cole at 7, Corbin Burns at 8. I think both of us are going to now agree that Jacob DeGrom cracks the top 10, which then pushes somebody outside of the top 10 for one, but then it could also push down Corbin Burns, because Jacob DeGrom will likely surpass him. So yeah, it's going to cause some shifts here in the market. A lot of teams were getting Jacob DeGrom in the second round on that turn. That's no longer going to be a thing. So farewell, c'est la vie to that. How do we want to analyze him? And I mean, if he's healthy, you smash, you win. Congratulations. You crushed. Right. So, I mean, you're either in or you're out. I don't think that we need to discuss where we're at on that. It's just we know that that's the situation here at hand.
I was just going to mention draft draft strategy perspective, especially with a bunch of us going to NFBC main events. And I think most people know the type of drafters that you have in those drafts. We're going to have a bunch over the weekend. Obviously an auction, so he'll go for a pretty penny. There's always somebody that's going to want him. Not always somebody that's from the New York area, but you know, just people recognize how amazing he is. They also recognize the downside. From a draft perspective, you've got essentially two kinds of people in the first half of a first round. Those that will just avoid him entirely and are fine with a hitter. And then there are people that they have to have a pitcher in the first half. Like that's what they're going to want to do. And if Gerrit Cole isn't there, if they, you know, they look at what Phil did last year, if you think about it, won the main event overall with Jacob deGrom on his team for only half a season. He cut his first round pick and still won the main event. Of course, not everyone's going to be able to, most people are not going to be able to do that, but that's the risk. That's something people are going to want to think about. And they're going to be thinking about, they're like, okay, I have a shot to get him here. You know, I'm pick, you know, maybe pick four doesn't even get him. Maybe in one league, he goes one overall, another pick, he goes eight. Like anything can really happen. All it takes is that one person to want him and be okay with potentially not having their first round pick and being behind the eight ball if something happens, for the opportunity cost of just absolutely smashing, right? Like if you are super confident and you're getting a lot of your targets there from like, you know, 2 to 20, and you start with DeGrom and he's healthy and has an amazing season, like there's your, you know, there's your differentiator, right? But yeah, that's the question. Like, is it gonna last, man? Like, I don't know. My strong gut feeling, I don't see 150 plus innings. I don't see him making it through the whole season. I could be absolutely wrong. But yeah, I just don't know. You know, I'm pick six in my main event. I'm if he's there, I doubt it. But if he's there, I'm not going to do it.
How you feeling? Are you excited? Isn't this great?
Yeah, this is the season, man. This is amazing. Yeah, I got the sixth pick in the main. I'm kind of looking at all my options through those, sort of basically through the whole draft. That's what I'll do before I get to Vegas. I'll kind of have a good idea. Never been more prepped than this year, especially because, you know, we're managing the projections, editing, and moving guys around on the VDP rankings every week. Like, man, I'm locked in, right? I mean, I could draft right now without a cheat sheet. Just, you know, I know who I want for the most part in most rounds, no contingency plans. So we'll see. And then the season starts and we'll see who I'm right on, who I hold too long. And if we pick up the right guys during the season, that's the beauty of it. It's such it's a long marathon, if you will. And yeah, so much can happen, man, but I'm excited to start the process with the draft.
You and I are recording on video and I'm pretty sure this is the most I've been smiling at you throughout a podcast. I'm just so excited. Do you know any of your league mates?
Yeah, of course. I know most of them really. And those that I don't have already popped into Twitter and I look forward to meeting them. Yeah, I'm pretty excited.
That's
loaded.
Awesome.
These leagues are all loaded. I'm drafting awesome. Two spots away from Phil, two spots away from Dusty Wagner, you know, Sniper Central over there. So, yeah, it'll be fun.
Okay. So we're going to have breakfast with Phil on Friday, and then you're going to draft in a main event with him on Saturday.
Yep.
Awesome. Okay. Yeah, I've got Toby, Batflip Crazies in my league. John Posma's in the league. Jody Ryan, Zach Nelson, our colleague, Brock Miller. Hopefully no one thinks that we're, what do they call that, collusion. No, I'm going to try and kick Brock's ass, and Brock's going to try and kick my ass. So there's no doubt about that. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I'm really, really excited. The juices are certainly flowing for this main event coming up on Saturday.
And that's more than just the whatever that was called, the mountain juice. What did you have in the morning your wife made you?
Oh, a London fog. Are you not familiar with what that is?
No, I know. I just forgot what you said.
No, yeah. It's a London fog, but it did get the juices flowing because I'm not a high intake when it comes to caffeine.
I gotcha.
She'll force me to stop if I have one cup of coffee. If I'm starting to feel good, she'll notice that I'm starting to bounce off the walls quite a bit. I wanted to mention one thing, and you said it as well. If you don't, if we haven't met, and if you do know that we're in a main event, if you're listening to this and you see me in Vegas or Vlad in Vegas, come up to us and say hello and introduce yourselves. We'd love to meet you. It's always great meeting new people every year when we're out in Vegas.
Yep, absolutely. And the FTN Happy Hour, Vidara, 3:30. So come if you're not drafting. A few more guys here to discuss. Shane Baz, arthroscopic surgery to remove loose bodies in his elbow. He's shut down a couple of weeks. I think a lot of people were already fading him just based on, not on talent, because the talent is exceptional. It was the management, the Urias treatment that he was probably going to get as far as being babied in his innings and in his starts. But now he falls to a point where, to me, I just don't think I'm going to be around to wait for it. He's going to be shut down 2-3 weeks after that. You're hoping comes in in May, which is probably good for, you know, if he's solid, then maybe he can just pitch every 5-6 days and make it through the season. But I don't know, but he could be a difference maker, but I don't know if he's now dropping beyond pick 200, there might be pitchers that I would consider taking him over. But if he's still going within the top 200, I don't think I'm drafting Shane Baz.
Yeah, I'm not drafting him at all. I'm not going to draft an injured pitcher similar to the Flaherty and Chris Sale mindset for me. You talked about the time missed in a fab league right now. That's what we're preparing for when talking about the main event. I'm not going to have a young injured pitcher on an organization like the Tampa Bay Rays, where we don't know what they're going to even do when he comes back. They might just say, take it easy and figure it out in the minors. We have no effing clue. Mm-hmm. So for me, I'm out. No thanks.
Luis Castillo, shoulder soreness, looking like he's probably going to miss opening day, and with shoulder soreness, meaning he probably isn't going to be traded before the season starts. At least that's what management said. They said they were going to hold on to him and Tyler Mahle for a bit. But Luis Castillo, you'll notice in the projections, a little bit of a drop there. Try not to over-adjust, but obviously somebody that is not ramped up and ready for the season, I think really stifles the ability to put 180 plus innings pitched on somebody. So he dips a little bit below that in the projections. He falls he's out of that top 100, at least for me, and really kind of going in the tier with now guys like Nathan Eovaldi, Sean Manaea, a little past Shane McClanahan even. I think those are guys that would take over Luis Castillo, especially thinking about Castillo's kind of up and down ratios from season to season, and the fact he now plays on a team that may give him very little run support.
This was a somewhat or potentially a blessing in disguise for me when talking about Luis Castillo. His ADP should go outside of the top 100 now that he isn't going to be ready for the opening day. And it's a shoulder issue. And anytime you have a shoulder issue, I'm going to be out on him. I was somewhat warming up to the Luis Castillo potentially being an SP2 or SP3 for me in the 6th or 7th round in the main event. So, this would have been a landmine, right? If I would have already done my main event and drafted him in the 6th round, boom, you just landed on a landmine. If you had already had a main event and drafted Chris Sale or Jack Flaherty, you're crushed in a main event, right? That's mm-hmm. just, it's so brutal. It's real funny to look at it from my perspective is when I see Chris Sale have this injury before a main event and I was already out on him, or when I see Jack Flaherty have his injury before a main event when I was already out on him. Not that I'm right, because we don't know that. In fact, they could come back healthy and do okay. But for me, I know that those are two people that are being targeted with good, decent draft capital that I wasn't going to want anyways. And then they end up hurt, and now they're off everyone's draft board at that current draft capital. And it sucks because I'm like, damn, there's two landmines that my opponents were basically going to stand down at some point, in my opinion, that was going to explode on them. And so fortunately for me, I think that this Luis Castillo scenario could have been one that's a benefit for me because I could have fallen into that trap. Mm-hmm. I think that I was slowly warming up to him, and I could have been falling on one of those landmines. So mm-hmm. as you know, the Sale and Flaherty ones weren't a positive for me. Potentially the Castillo one is, and I won't have him at all anymore. I have three shares right now. And I will not be drafting him again because he has shoulder issues.
And you know, that happens every year to a lot of us, right? Like we have certain targets that we are out on. Those players end up something happening to them, negatively being impact in before the drafts, before our really big drafts come. and they now move other players we liked higher up the pool. And now, yeah, like you mentioned, those guys are no longer, it really hurts and it stings, but it happens every year. There are always those guys. The funny thing about those three specifically, Sale, Flaherty, and Castillo, I did not have any of those guys in my early drafts, but I had been taking them lately. So before they got injured, I was looking at my, and this is the problem. This is what happens when you're volume drafting the, the draft and holds. I'm looking, I'm like, okay, I don't have any Sale. Oh, sixth round, he fell around. Okay, perfect spot to grab him here. Let's give him a shot. Jack Flaherty actually was higher on than most people. I know our friend and colleague, Jack Flaherty, Scott Jenstad was going to, on his podcast, he was going to basically be super anti-Flaherty. And this is before the injury. So he had to kind of pivot on that. I thought, hey, if he's healthy, he's going to be just fine. Remember how he was in the conversation with Bueller as one of the studs, but obviously there's an issue there, right? If he says there's like a little bit of a tear, they say there's a tear, he's now getting a second opinion. I mean, that's an issue. That's not something I want to touch whatsoever. So a couple shares I have of Flaherty, whatever. Those teams, I'm sure won't kill him, but I'm just not interested in drafting like someone like that going forward. If he's available in the 28th round, if he falls that far of a 12 teamer, he's there at like pick 330. Yeah, sure. Absolutely. If I don't have many stashes on my team at that point, I'll take a stab there. Last thing I'll mention on the pitchers here, because we want to talk, kind of close things out with closers, which would be apropos. The Reds, man, that trade that they made with Kansas City, with Amir Garrett going to Kansas City. And there's, what am I missing? And there's another big piece there.
In the bullpen, who they added?
Well, there was the Mike Minor deal, and then there was another Justin Dunn trade.
Yeah, he's got the shoulder. He's done. Oh, Mike Minor, Justin Dunn. Yeah, I think you mentioned them all.
I'm blanking because there were two. Did they make just one deal or?
Well, they just brought in. I'm sorry. So the guy that I want to mention is they just brought in Hunter Strickland.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, and I'm going to be writing him up in the on our next transaction report because I think that he poses a threat to people. Think Art Warren might be the closer right now, which my hands are up. We don't know. TJ Antone's hurt. He's not going to be pitching from Tommy John surgery. We've got elbow and back soreness for Lucas Sims, who's the most talented reliever in this rotation. Hunter Strickland does have closer experience in the past. He has 21 career saves, with the most coming in 2018 when he had 14 with the San Francisco Giants. I think that he could potentially be somebody that just falls into saves, just being the situation in Cincinnati. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. So that actually was, I was going to say, I forgot Justin Dunn came over in the Winker deal, Winker and Eugenio Suarez deal. But I think my point was that the Reds ended up getting a couple of bags of rocks. They got Justin Dunn in that deal from Seattle, and he's out for a few months with a shoulder issue. And then now Mike Minor, who they got in the Amir Garrett trade from Kansas City, is dealing with shoulder issues of their own. So yeah, that's concerning. And then what you mentioned about the Reds and them signing Strickland, perfect segue for us to finish the show here with some closers. Yeah, I mean, right now, Art Warren is, as I guess the kids said in the 50s, the cat's pajamas. Maybe it was the 60s. I should probably check my references. But man, do people love themselves some Art Warren. I think he might actually be Justin Mason's Cedric Mullins for this year. That's kind of the vibe I'm getting with how much he loves Art Warren, as do a lot of other people. So, and hey, there's nothing wrong there. The guy's a stud. I'm on team comeback soon, Lucas Sims, because I'm a huge fan. I really want to see him close. I have some shares. I want him to be okay, for him to be healthy. There were some conflicting reports between him and management, him saying he's fine. At this point, it looks like he's just behind a little bit, but should be ready not long after opening day, starting to pitch again, hopefully. But Hunter Strickland kind of messes things up there as well. I mean, anything goes, I think, on that team. Luis Sessa from the New York Yankees, I think, is somebody who else who could be in the mix there.
I don't want to look or sound like a hypocrite, but I would treat a reliever like this much differently than a starter, just because of the actual innings pitched and how much they need to give on a given outing or basis. If Lucas Sims were to, let's just say, fall, we didn't have any more news, I think he would be somebody I'd be willing to take that pick 400 to 450 dart on late in a main event, just because if it is, we get recent news and it's like, oh yeah, he is going to be fine a week later, and then he's the closer and the talent and skills play and he remains healthy, you just fall in, you know, 20 plus saves. Mm-hmm. Whereas with these starters, I just have more concerns of things going wrong because of the ramping up process, and it just takes longer, right? I think that they're an IL ornament for much longer. So I think that if I was going to take a shot on somebody that does have some sort of injury speculation, and it doesn't sound as severe as like Jack Flaherty and Chris Sale, right? Doesn't have broken ribs. So I don't want to sound like a hypocrite or look like one. If you saw me take a shot on somebody and pick 400 as a reliever that could potentially be hurt right now, I just think that their comeback time could be a little bit quicker for me. But all in all, I think that this team is pretty bad. And with Justin Dunn, yeah, it's unfortunate. I was a fan of him last year. He had some good stream outings last year for the Seattle Mariners. And I actually have 5 shares of him. On 2 400 DCs, a $150 DC, and 250. So the good news about that is I drafted him in like round 35 to 40 or whatever. So it's not going to hurt me that bad, but it is tough to just have somebody sit there that is unusable for a few months.
Yeah, for the most part, I think it's an avoid situation, or you just grab him cheap. Yeah. The one thing about Lucas Sims over the last week is ADP hasn't changed all that much. A 241 ADP hasn't moved the needle much, although in some online drafts he went as far as round 28, round 29 ish so in the 330s, something to consider if he does slip and you're looking for somebody who could lead the team in saves on a bad team. That would be him. To kind of wrap things up here, last 5-10 minutes here, just some quick your strategy, if you don't mind sharing, before we head out to the main event on saves, on just like in general. I mean, you know, I don't know what picks you have in what draft, but are you interested in getting one of the big guys, Josh Hader and Liam Hendricks, Iglesias? Are you okay with waiting on the next tier or the tiers afterwards, or even kind of playing with fire, dancing on fire and waiting on closers? What's your kind of general overall strategy, and is it what pick you have dependent?
Yeah. So if I was drafting at the beginning of a draft and Josh Hader, let's say, made it back to me at pick 31, first pick in the third round, last pick in the second round, at that point, I would certainly take my shot on Hader in a fab league like the main event. I do have 4 shares of Josh Hader, and I know Rob Silver doesn't like hearing that.
Say exposure. Say you have 27.3% exposure. Is that good, Rob?
It's 28.6. But these are all draft and hold leagues where I'm going to emphasize pushing them up just a little bit because there is no fab. There is no opportunity in free agency to stream the next person that gets a gig due to performance, lack thereof, or injury. So coming into the main event, I would have to be at the beginning of the draft to take a shot on somebody like Hader. So for me, I'll just be flat out blunt and honest with you if you're listening. I even forgot. So Jeff Erickson's in the league as well. Eddie Gillis is in the main event if they're listening. Hi, guys. We'll see you soon. I'm picking pick 11th. And in the second round, I believe that's pick 20 or something like that. I won't be taking a shot on my first closer there. I will not be doing that. So that's not something I will be doing in a fab league. But like I said, if I was picking at the beginning of the draft, I would look to maybe potentially take a shot. And if I was still doing draft champions leagues or an NL only, AL only specific league, I would certainly pounce on one of those guys.
Yeah, for myself, picking out of the 6th hole with my second pick being 25 and then 36 in the third round. I don't know. I don't know how it's going to shape out for me, but I don't necessarily see it happening. It really would have to be all of the targets I absolutely love are gone, and I can sort of formulate a plan in my head on the spot of how I would build with a closer there. I don't know. I don't think I'm going to end up with one of those guys, but I will make sure to grab a solid closer somewhere along the way. Wanted to ask you how you feel about a couple of these guys where they are good offenses, where their managers do not want to name them their best closer, their best relievers as the closer. One of those situations, of course, we had been waiting for was Blake Treinen, who has seen a massive jump into the top 100 overall. Probably see the same thing in main events, despite the fact that Dave Roberts wants to kind of try something new there, not name one guy necessarily, take it one game at a time, and really acknowledging that Trinan is his best closer, probably would be the guy if they were to name one guy. But hey, they've got Daniel Hudson with closing experience. They've got the fire of Bristol Gratterall. They have several guys there that could step in. They might even sign someone, add to the team. So him and then Giovanni Gallegos, because manager Marmol there does not want to name Gallegos the guy. They've got Jordan Hicks probably going to be going back to the bullpen. Genesis Cabrera has been pretty solid. They signed Nick Whitgren from Cleveland. And then Ryan Helsley has returned. He was actually pretty solid in 2019. So how are you handling those two situations?
Starting with the Dodgers bullpen, Blake Trinan has been one of the biggest risers the entire draft season. If you started to look at ADP in November, then December, January, February, now we're in March. I think I was drafting Blake Trinan in rounds 18, 19 or something like that. By Rowan Wick, I think is where he was going. His ADP over the last week is 115 with a min of 99. So we have seen him being drafted inside the top 100. Now you get Dave Roberts and coach speak. So this is going to be a tricky one because you know that Trinan has the skills to do it. We do know that Dave Roberts loves to use one person. That's all we've really seen, and his tenure with the Los Angeles Dodgers. So taking both of those and then adding him to being on the Dodgers and the projected amount of wins that they have, math and logic would tell you that he's going to be the closer and to ignore the lines in between there. But they do have guys that are incredibly talented. Daniel Hudson could even get saves, right? So there is a possibility, there is a chance that does happen, that you do get a closer committee. And if that does happen, you're going to see Hudson and Gratterall and Alex Vesia, Phil Bickford, they're all going to get these opportunities. Abruzdar is going to get opportunities. You could even see David Price get closing opportunities if that is what the Dodgers end up doing. I don't necessarily think that that's what they end up doing. If I had to place money on it, I would say sure, Blake Trinan gets you 20 plus saves. That's what I would guess. However, I'm sure as shit not paying this current ADP right here for
him. That's tough.
That is tough. It's hard for me to digest. So to be honest with you, I'm out on this current price. I just can't pay that with the possibility that he isn't, you know, the full-time closer.
That's the problem is if we knew, we had some insight that it was just coach speak and it was going to just end up being Trinan, sure, a sixth round price I could pay. But knowing that there will be times when my sixth round guy is not closing out the game, that's just something I can't pay. It's just kind of overpaying for what, you know, glorified ratios. And what if he gives up a couple of runs and hurts the ERA and WHIP? I mean, I don't know. I don't think I can do that specifically.
I'm sorry. I know we got to get out of here and we're going to get to the St. Louis Cardinals bullpen, but real quick, let's just hypothetically say, somebody from a Dodgers beat reporter tweeted later tonight that Dave Roberts actually did in fact come out and he has named Blake Trinan the full-time closer. Does he go ahead of Aroldis Chapman? Does he go ahead of Kenley Jansen?
Yes. Yes. Okay. And yes.
And what about Ryan Pressly?
He'd be in that range.
Okay. All right. That's okay. Sorry. And then with the Cardinals situation, there are too many uncertainties. I just can't pay that price for Gallegos. If he opening day comes out and he's pitching in the seventh or eighth in a high leverage situation in a one run game, that's going to, your stomach is just, it's your gut is not going to feel how the roto gut normally feels. It's not going to feel good. So to sum that up quickly, I can't pay that price tag for Gallegos. Let's see, what is he, the seventh or eighth closer going on average, or in air quotes closer? Gallegos has an ADP over the last week of 85 with a min of 68. So you have seen him even get pushed into the fifth round, middle of the fifth round before. So that's just too much for me. There's other targets that I'm going to be looking at there.
Yep. Oliver Marmol is the new manager. He's the youngest in the league. We just really don't know what to expect from him, even though he should name Gallegos the guy. And maybe that will be the realization he has eventually. Who knows how long that'll take? Who knows how stubborn he is? Let's end the show with one thought, just somebody out there that you like in the later rounds. I'll start. I just wanted to mention that Ian Kennedy is still incredibly undervalued. I think the fact that he signed there and people became disinterested that he signed with the Arizona Diamondbacks, I feel like people should be even more interested, because I don't necessarily think Mark Melancon has all that much of a long leash. Even though he has more save experience, has been more of a closer. Of course, Kennedy, a converted starter, former Arizona guy several years ago. I think Kennedy's the better pitcher right now. I think he ends up taking over that role sooner than later. So I'm full fade Melancon, and I'm picking up Kennedy a few rounds ahead of his price tag.
I like that one, and I hope that comes to fruition, because I would love to see those 7th, 8th, 9th, and round Mark Melancon shares just get lit on fire, because I don't want anything to do with that guy. So sorry, I'm not sorry on that one. I think it would be irrational for me not to say Tanner Rainey. I'm going to go out here and be really honest. I have 8 shares and 57.1% of my teams with Tanner Rainey. This is a late round option that I've been looking to acquire. Let me see here. In the tag team championship that we just recently had, Zach Betancourt and I drafted Tanner Rainey in the 21st round. I know that he has walk issues. I know that he has home run issues. But I think that this is an organization that might want to give him the opportunities. I know Davey Martinez has said that there hasn't been an identified role yet for him, but in quotes, he would love for Tanner Rainey to show that he's ready to close. This is a young starting pitcher. Tanner Rainey is now coming into his 4th season. Technically, he pitched a little bit in 2018, but we're going to dismiss that because it was only for 7 innings. So 2022 mm-hmm. will be his 4th season. He's 29 years old, which is an okay range for me right now when looking at somebody that could still potentially figure some things out. I don't think that the walk rate is going to be anywhere near 16.6% that we saw last season. 10% obviously still isn't great, and that's not something you want to promote. But we have seen a home run to fly ball rate of 1.12, which is okay. I just think that if his stuff plays out with the strikeout rates that we've seen from him, he's got the stuff to do it. He's got a career 32% strikeout rate. Get that walk rate down a little bit, mitigate some of those home runs, figure some things out with the maturation process. Doolittle's a lefty. People are going to think that he might close. Kyle Finnegan got the gig last year, but he lost it. Who did he lose it to, Vlad?
Who are we talking about? Doolittle?
Yeah, no. So we're talking about the Nationals bullpen in my late late round Kyle relief. Finnegan? Yeah, so Kyle Finnegan lost the job at the end of the season to Tanner Rainey. Tanner Rainey ended up being the closer at the end of the year for the Washington Nationals there. He had 3 saves to end the year. And it looked like he kind of got us a little bit in line to end of the season. So he ended the season on a good note. Kyle Finnegan did not end the season on a good note. They bring Doolittle back, but Doolittle is a lefty. Maybe they look to have him be their high leverage pitcher or facing lefties, you know, in big situations. So I think that the ADP continues to descend and drop for Tanner Rainey. It's now at 333 over the last week with a max of 356. Closed at the end of the year. We have the coach speak saying that he would love for him to close. He's young enough with the high strikeout rate to do it. I think that I would be willing to take another shot on Tanner Rainey, and obviously slow since I've already drafted him 8 times.
I've got my fair share of Rainey's as well. So I'm on board. Okay. Hope he does the same thing. So yeah, guys, everybody, thank you so much for listening to this episode. Hope if you haven't already, get on board FTNFantasy.com just this week alone. We had this year's Yelich article just drop, VDP rankings updates, projection updates. We now have point scoring for underdog fantasy and for NFBC Cutline as well. If you're in Vegas, we look forward to seeing you there. If you're drafting at home, wish you lots of luck this weekend. So for Matthew Davis, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with Matthew Davis and Vlad Sedler. Make sure to follow your host on Twitter at @MattyWood_ and @RotoGut. Hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.